Good evening and welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. This evening we are looking at a huge churn in international relations and the state of the relationship between New Delhi and Washington. It comes at a time when, in the latest sort of dig at India, the US Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has said that India is profiteering from its import of Russian oil and has said that this is unacceptable. Now, these are remarks which will not be looked favourably in New Delhi at a time when there is this newfound camaraderie between Beijing and New Delhi. So the dynamics are clearly changing. America has been a valuable ally in the past. Is that still the case, or are there certain diplomatic dimensions that need to be looked at very, very carefully, diplomatic dynamics which may be changing? Joining us now, Aina Tangan, senior fellow at the Tahe Institute, and be joined by Ambassador Daniel Fried. He's a former U.S. diplomat, and Ambassador Sanjay Bhattacharya. Thank you all very much for being with us. Ambassador Fried, let me come to you first, sir. What is the point in the U.S. Treasury Secretary talking about India profiteering when the U.S. would know entirely well that, you know, we've got enormous energy requirements, and this is an extremely sore point with New Delhi, which is a close strategic ally of the United States? Wouldn't this actually impact the relationship negatively?
I can't see any point in what Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said. It is perfectly legitimate for the U.S. to go after Russian revenue from selling oil. That's a perfectly good target because Russia is engaged in an aggressive war against Ukraine. But to go after Russian oil, first, India is not the only purchaser. So what are we doing hitting India when we're not touching China? So there's an immediate inconsistency. Secondly, India was not profiteering. The U.S. in 2022 imposed an oil price cap on Russian oil. The whole purpose was to incentivize India to buy discounted Russian oil, helping India. And the real purpose was, of course, to lower Russian oil revenues. The oil price cap served its purpose, though Russia has tried to go around it by a shadow through the shadow fleet. But in profiteering, I'm sorry. The whole purpose was to incentivize India, to make it profitable for India to buy cheap Russian oil to hurt the Russian economy. This worked out well. If the U.S. wants to go after Russian oil revenue, we can go after all of the purchasers of Russian oil, as we did with Iran sanctions, and urge them or push them to reduce their purchases of Russian oil, or we can find other ways to take money out of Russia's pocket by taxing its oil sales. But to go after India as a sole focus and to insult India with, frankly, an unsupported charge that it was profiteering, but we wanted India to profit, makes no good sense to me. I don't see the purpose. Now, I'm not an expert on U.S.-India relations, but I've been around a long time. And ever since the Clinton administration, but especially the George W. Bush administration, the U.S. has built a strategic partnership with India. It makes perfectly good sense. So why damage it for no good reason? Anyway, sorry to go on.
I take your point, Ambassador. And I think in New Delhi as well, we remain astonished by that. Aina Tangan, we have spoken over the last several years in a very different context. In every second sentence of a question which I asked you, I've raised the word Galwan. I promise I won't raise that today, unless you want me to. But be that as it may, Mr. Aina Tangan, do you believe that this is a new start, a new reset in the relationship between Beijing and New Delhi, which doesn't necessarily have to do with the United States, but it has to do with perhaps a greater sense of pragmatism, that India and China need to, A, work economically together besides resolving everything else?
No, I'd agree with that. I mean, last October, before Trump was in office, there are already signs that things were cooling down in terms of the border issues. Now, there are lots of issues. There's areas of influence, traditional ones, things. But I agree with many of the things that Ambassador Frye has said, but he hasn't answered the $24,000 question, which is why? Why would the U.S. do this? And the only thing I can come up with is that they're concerned about BRICS. Why? Because Donald Trump has said so. He said quite clearly he downplays it, says it's nothing, but then he says he's going to put 100% tariff on it if they do anything about an alternative to the dollar. He's also said, I'm going to put an extra 10% just because it's BRICS. So this tells you that what's keeping Washington up at night is the idea that you'd have 10 countries that represent 40% of the world's GDP, the majority of land, resources, population, markets, and four times as much manufacturing as the United States. If that happened, they come together, they have come to Washington and say, knock it off, Donald Trump, in terms that he understands we're bigger than you are, since he's a bully. This could change everything. And I think this is what he's concerned about. Unfortunately, as usual with Donald Trump, he's actually pushing these countries together when he's trying to tear them apart.
Yeah, that's interesting. Would you agree, Ambassador Bhattacharya, that in a sense, the U.S. has brought China and New Delhi closer?
I seem to have a somewhat different perspective on this because as major powers, India, China, the United States will follow their own trajectory, which is one of the reasons why India is not in an alliance relationship with any mm-hmm. other country, but rather in strategic partnerships with several others. And I think that is some understanding that is required in various capitals across the world. I think what was happening in D.C. was somewhat out of sync with reality, and I agree with Ambassador Frye on his assessment of that. I would also endorse the understanding that there's probably a lack of understanding in D.C. about BRICS as well. I would say that BRICS was formed to actually work with the G7, the G8 in the earlier days, and to have that collaborative relationship. That there are some today commentators who think BRICS is a threat to the United States is actually an absurd idea because BRICS has never sought to replace even the G7. But it is obviously a growing force of PCs. On the China front, I think what is actually happening is that India and China, independent of their relations with anyone else, do figure that it is time to set the bridge behind and cross it and look at how we can go ahead. And I think ever since Kazan, when Prime Minister Modi and President Xi Jinping decided that we would go ahead, there have been a series of steps that have led up to what was decided yesterday. So I think it's an autonomous movement, which is not dependent on our relations, our really very strong and strategic relations and partnership with the United States. And we hope that we will be able to fix that. And I remain fairly confident about that as well.
We'll talk about America in a moment with Ambassador Frye, but Aina Tangen, if I can come back to you. Late last night over here, India Standard Time, I was fairly startled at the depth of the press release, which actually spelt out all the steps which India and China are now going to be looking at to try and, you know, de-escalate along the Himalayan frontier. They've identified a bunch of new mechanisms. They're going after low-hanging fruit. And there seems to be this renewed impetus to try and resolve the issue. Do you believe we are potentially headed to a big announcement between Modi and Xi in Tianjin?
I do. There was a reaffirmation that the both sides would be led by their leaders and that they would follow closely. That is an indication that they're expecting big things. Wang Yi wasn't here for 2 days because he has nothing else to do. He's currently filling two posts. He's busier than anyone could reasonably expect. So this is important to China. It's been important since 2013. There have been a series of unfortunate incidents with different, perhaps, perspectives on each side. But that's the past. The question is, what is the future? I mean, India, I know you don't want to talk. Well, we'll talk about it. But India has a U.S. problem. The question is going to, you know, have a kind of Stockholm syndrome response or just simply take it in some sort of way, say, well, we've been around a long time. Donald Trump shall pass and we'll just feel the pain. Or does it decide that it wants to get together with BRICS? I mean, Lula and Modi have talked. So have all the rest of the BRICS leaders. I mean, Putin briefed every single one of them as to what was happening with things. That's very different from Donald Trump, who didn't brief anybody. In fact, he kept people away. He didn't allow Ukraine to come to their own peace negotiations, nor did he allow Europe. He had separate meetings with them and told them, basically, these are the things you need to do. So, I mean, you have very different styles. One outlook is, you know, we're extractive. We're the America. We're the dominant power. You need to give us some sort of, you know, fealty. And that can take monetary value in terms of tariffs and other things. Versus China, which has not been starting wars. They've had issues, but they're trying to work them out, as you pointed out, in very, very detailed and specific ways. Right. Real differences here.
Ambassador Friday, you know, international relations, as you know better than most, you know, if there's a vacuum, someone fills it. You know, Beijing has been quick to move in. You know, this is a bit of a conspiracy theory, but I would suggest that Beijing has been quick to move in, spotting that the relationship between Washington and New Delhi has changed. I mean, is there not somebody advising Donald Trump, saying that, good heavens, we've worked this relationship, we've based it on foundational agreements, there's been a lot of disagreement which we've sorted out, it's premised on people-to-people ties, it's premised on high tech, it's premised on education, it's premised on so much. And that seems to be, you know, at a standstill. This entire trade negotiation, which went on for such a long time and which was about to be sealed, you know, I mean, that's come to a halt. Forget about sanctions and oil. It is perplexing to me as an observer of this for three decades to see a relationship go from no trust to huge trust to no trust once again. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, the U.S.-India relationship has been nurtured by successive administrations for a long time, and we have equities in it. So I respect those equities. 2 points, though. First, I'm not part of Trump world, hardly a sympathizer. But let's be fair. President Trump invited the Europeans and Zelensky to the White House and on Monday had a constructive meeting. So it's not accurate to say that Trump is ignoring the Europeans. He is working with them in a way that was seemed unlikely 6 months ago. At the beginning of his administration. This is a good sign. Secondly, you described the BRICS as not anti-American, but as consultative. Putin describes it as explicitly anti-American and anti-Western. Putin is a destructive player on the world scene. He makes war against his neighbor, a war in the case of Ukraine of national extermination. He doesn't think Ukraine is a proper country at all. I look at the BRICS also through the prism of not just what India says about it, and what you said was perfectly reasonable, but what Putin says about it. I don't think the BRICS is a benign organization. It is united. What keeps it together are a number of things, but one of them is Putin's anti-America and, to some extent, Xi's anti-America agenda. So the United States is bound to be suspicious of BRICS, and it has good reason, and this is not the Trump administration. The Biden people, whom I knew well, didn't much like BRICS either. So India can play both ways, but the United States is going to look at BRICS with considerable skepticism based on what BRICS leaders have said. Now, I take the point. All that said, I take the point about the U.S.-India relationship. And my advice to the Trump administration, if they ask me, would be don't single out India, because India as a single actor is not our problem with respect to Russia. If we're mad at India because of oil sales, then we ought to be equally annoyed with China. And the solution has to be one that can be presented to the Indians as not singling them out. And this seems to me to be just elementary statecraft. Like, do it right, man. Don't piss off the Indians for no good reason, is how I would bluntly put it. And then we'd be in a much stronger place to to ask the Indians not to do things that benefit the Russians, but we have to design our economic pressure against Russia, which is perfectly valid while the war is going on, in a way that other countries can understand, if not love. Easier said than done. I get it.
Okay. Ambassador Bhattacharya, how would you... very interesting arguments on all sides over here. To the question of whether you expect a huge breakthrough in the Modi-Xi meeting, and B, where does that leave India and America, which in a sense have premised their relationship on the shared concern strategically over China?
You know, I would wish to see the decisions of yesterday and the paper that came out last evening in the context of the extensive and very detailed discussions that have been ongoing for the last 4 years and more. And I think the kind of work that the WMCC and even at the commander's level that has been achieved has been quite considerable. In some ways, I do see that many of these mechanisms and decisions are kind of going back to the past, because as you would recall, we used to have a joint working group mechanism under which there was an expert group, and we had a CBMS treaty agreement as well. And I think in some ways what is being talked of in the two working groups is very similar, about looking at detailed maps for delimitation and for looking at boundary management, which is very similar to what we did under the CBMS agreement. So I don't see this as something that has emerged yesterday, but this is a process through which India and China have negotiated, gone back to some of the positions that they used to hold in the past. But there is also one very significant difference, and I think that is probably coming out of the understanding at Kazan, which was that we look at this as a boundary settlement rather than as an LAC, or line of actual control settlement. And I think that is a very significant point of improvement and something that we need to really work upon much more. Will this lead to a major announcement at Tianjin? I cannot say, but I think my sense is it may be a little early, because there's still a fair amount of groundwork to be done before we can come to any significant decision. So again, as I say, this has been a fairly autonomous process that has gone on, and I do not wish to link it to the America issue, which is a very important strategic partner for us. You know, for me, it's also somewhat perplexing, as it is for my co-panelists, that while a process of trade negotiations is ongoing and there is a sort of a draft agreement, there is suddenly a demand for an extra 25%, the first 25%. And that this was, in a sense, was this just a bargaining chip? And I think that can be negotiated. And I think all the issues can be negotiated, because obviously there is no deal until the final deal is done. The second one, which came about, the next 25%, which was the Russia connection, actually falls flat, and which is why I'm really puzzled by the Treasury Secretary's comment that, you know, to link it up with Russia when you had the meeting in Alaska, followed by the meetings with Zelensky and the Europeans in D.C., to now go back to the Russian issue is somewhat meaningless. Does this mean that the Treasury Secretary is going to kind of put sanctions on the Europeans who buy more than half of Russia's LNG? I don't know. So I think there are certain parameters in D.C. which seem to be out of sync, and I think we need to have better information systems over there. We need to work a lot more with our American friends to make them understand as to what the ground realities are. There is a shared future, and I think both sides are quite conscious and aware of it, and I think we will work towards it. And I think Mr. Trump will also be a very serious agent in building that shared future. Sure. We have great hope in him.
Ainathangan, Ambassador Bhattacharya has spoken like a true diplomat, the last couple of sentences that you said. But Ainathangan, let me come to you. Do you actually believe that despite all the hostility that we've seen, that we can actually move to a boundary, if not a border, in a finite period of time?
No, it's going to take a while to do it, but you have to have leaders who are committed to this idea. And that's exactly what we're starting to hear. There's a lot of issues that have to be settled and things like that. But I have to respond to something my colleague, Ambassador Frye, said. The hypocrisy is dripping the United States is the one who's been buying yellow cake from Russia and also fertilizers, while insisting that everybody else give up their energy. That and they were the ones who told India to go forth and get this oil to balance the world budget. Otherwise, you'd have a situation where there's a deficit and oil prices would spike. So I and this happened during Biden's time. In fact, they doubled the order in Biden's last year. People around the world are getting tired. This hypocrisy. You come on the show and you say, oh, you know, don't worry about it. You know, I can't explain it. Well, it's time the U.S. started explaining why it's doing these unpredictable things to countries.
Okay.
You know, there's a bunch of penguins out there who are wondering why, since there's no humans on their island, that they're getting tariffs. You know, and you might not be a Trump guy, but, you know, many of these policies were put in, continued by Biden. So it is not just a Trump thing. This is an American. This is a Washington.
All right. Hold on. I'm out of time, but I must give Ambassador Fried the last word. Sir, respond in a minute or so, if you can, before I start wrapping this up. Go ahead, Ambassador Fried.
It's perfectly reasonable for the U.S. and Europe to work to push the Russian economy. I'm surprised that anybody would object to that, given the nature of Russia's aggressive war. You talked about American hypocrisy. Well, let's be straight about this. Nobody's clean in this one. Nobody. We all have inconsistencies. And I think the Trump administration tariff policy is quite possibly misguided. I'm no big fan of it. But let's not talk about American inconsistency, which is real, without recognizing a lot of inconsistencies. Let's focus on the real, on the major problem, which is to go after Russia. Secondly, have a more reasonable approach to India, and not get engaged in the usual anti-American rhetoric that everything the United States does is dirty. Now, that's not going to help us. We need to move forward together, working with our fellow democracies. I am a believer in the free world.
All right.
And thanks for the opportunity.
We're all believers in the free world, and let's hope that we can all be friends. But it is great to be speaking about the India-China relationship from a pragmatic standpoint, despite a lot of the concern that so many observers, myself included, do actually feel at this stage. But let's hope in the interest of billions on both sides of the line of actual control, the boundary or the border, call it what you will, that there is a real future over there. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. It's time for us to take this short break.